Empire Podcast this week, we delve deep into the non-horrible history of our special guest, Mr. Nick Frost.
Some of it's horrible.
You've written a book about it, Nick.
Yeah.
Plus, the usual news and nonsense on the movie podcast that is still struggling to get over the horror of Joe Pesci's rap video. But here's the thing, are you going to tell Joe Pesci he can't rap? You're not. You're just not.
Absolutely.
Hello,
not.
Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to the Empire Podcast. This week, I'm joined by two colleagues, two of such lethal cunning. We have our geek queen, Helen O'Hara.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yes.
Fantastic. And we have whatever the hell James Dyer is. How are you, James?
Hi, Chris.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good.
Good, good, good. Excellent. But every now and again on the show, we are very, very lucky to be joined by a temporary colleague of such lethal cunning, somebody who sits in for most of the show. I'm delighted to say that today we are joined by actor, writer, an all-round man's man, man about town, Mr. Nick Frost. How are you, man?
Hey, I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah, good, good, good. Here, of course, currently starring in Horrible Histories, Rotten Romans.
Yeah, apparently. I haven't seen it, but...
You are in it.
I am in it, yeah.
I just double-checked.
My son went to see it, and he was like, you're in it loads. So I was kind of happy.
Yeah. No musical number, though. There's lots of musical numbers in this movie, but Craig Roberts gets to sing. You don't.
Yeah, I was like, I'm all right. You know, I did Cuban Fury. I feel my dancing in films is done.
Well, it's very interesting you mentioned Cuban Fury because...
I pretended that my knee was really sore.
And then the back went and then, yeah.
Yeah, oh, terrible. Knees. IBS.
Can't do it. Yeah, mad cow. Just some
human
manifesting.
Creutzfeldt-Jakob syndrome.
A couple of weeks ago, people were banging on Twitter about the fact that it was the 7th anniversary of the opening ceremony of the Olympics. And that is special for me because you may not remember this, Nick, but that is the day of the opening ceremony of the Olympics. I was in a car park, on a roof of a car park, somewhere outside
Hayes,
London.
Middlesex.
That's where it was, watching you and Chris O'Dowd
have a dance fight.
Do the big old dance fight in Cuban Fury.
Yeah, God, was that then? I don't even
know. I know, yeah.
Someone else, I was in like a big Asda near me the other day and someone was following me. When I got my kids, my spider sense tingles when I see people kind of follow me around because I think, I will open you up if you come near my kids. But he was like, oh, hello there. And I was like, hey. But he said, I work at the NCP. You guys had your dance fight on.
Oh, wow.
Which is kind of cool.
It's all coming back,
cool,
man.
I mean,
cool. It was a cracking day. It was
very hot, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was incredibly hot. I wasn't
very
there for
hot.
The Peg cameo.
No, I forgot about that. Yeah, that was kind of cool to shoot. I enjoyed doing that.
It was fun. But what are your memories of that dance fight? That was a lot of fun to watch.
I don't know. I think I was still at that point when I was embarrassed that people were watching me dance. I think my memories were they had bought like a big tent for the cast to sit in.
Uh-huh.
And they'd got a company to drop off air conditioning units. We just sat in like a Baltically frozen meat locker and then had to go out and...
Sweat it out.
Do that kind of business, yeah.
While people like me, regular schmoes, had to sweat on set.
Sure, yeah.
Regular schmoes.
Sure.
Yeah.
But at least it adds to the Cuban feel, right? If you're...
Yes,
it was... It had, yeah.
You want to
like
be quite sweaty.
Havana and steam... vibe.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, you could see Heathrow in the background and like, Corrupt FM just around the corner. It wasn't, you know,
the glamour of the movie business.
It wasn't like, you know, hot Havana nights.
No. We'll leave that to Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. How did Horrible Histories happen for you? Is it because you're a dad these days? And
listen, I was just kind of approached and I knew of it and, you know, knew it had a good heart and they kind of said, here, we want you to be Argus, this Celt. And I just think I had a good beard for it. And they saw that I had a beard.
You
and
do have.
Was willing to wear a wig.
That is a magnificent beard. We should point out.
Yeah.
I have massive beard envy at the moment.
For real? Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's just, I just don't shave. That's it.
That's so, secret.
But
that's
both
it.
Chris and I can try that.
Well, mine stopped.
But
mine
not
stopped growing for a while, you know. And like 6 weeks ago, I decided to try and change my life in some way and get fit and stuff. So I've lost 2 stone in a month.
Wow.
In that month, my beard has begun growing again. I don't know why, but it just
it's compensating.
Kick-started and went off. So and there's some correlation, I think, with weight loss and beard growth.
Are you on like a protein thing? Is it protein?
Yeah, I'm like under 600 calories a day for the next 3 months or something like that.
Wow.
But the aim is you lose 10 stone in a year and then you live to see your children get married.
Well,
I think
which
I'm
is
the
nice.
Best one in the world, being
it's
a big
strange,
fat, and funny man who's 47. There aren't big, fat, funny men who are 57, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So do you just want to be a big fat guy, or do you want to see your kids get married? Mm. Not to each other, that would be weird. but you know what I mean. I think you have to make a choice and, you know, stop drinking and smoking and everything.
And
so I'm just
the beard
eating.
Is your reward.
The beard is all I got left. that's me. I just now it's growing again. It's
you were clean shaven this morning.
I can feel it growing right now. I think they just said, do you fancy doing it? And I think I'm kind of lucky that they, you know, like in Badlands and other bits and pieces, they say you can kind of come and do what you want, you know. Which is great, but then when you're doing something like Horrible Histories, I think it was the most kind of IQ heavy production team I'd ever worked with, because like they all seem to be producers of history, or you know, professors, or and like you do an improvisation and they say, oh, it's very funny but not accurate historically. It's like, oh, okay, cool, you know. But it was fun, it was nice, you know, it was nice.
So working with people like Greg Jenner, did you meet
I didn't meet
Greg?
Anyone. Okay. We were just in our own little Celtic encampment.
That's right, yeah, because the film's divided into kind of bubbles.
Yeah.
Craig Roberts is off doing his own thing, and you get Lee Mack off doing his own thing.
Yeah, I saw Lee. We saw a couple of days of Lee.
Yeah.
But yeah, the best thing, well, listen, the Celtic village was incredible, you know, just sat around in a Celtic village, like just sat in my tent, which was a big, you know, round, what are they called, roundhouse or whatever.
Yeah.
Just amazing, just looking around thinking, how did people survive past 10?
Yeah.
How did it happen? I don't get it.
So what's the most interesting history fact you learned?
The Romans introduced cats to Britain.
Did they?
Why didn't we have cats? Why weren't cats domestically just rolling around?
One of them brought them over and it just
brought a cat with it.
Kittens.
Well, cats, yeah. Or there was a...
Probably, yeah, more than one cat.
Yeah, yeah, presumably.
Nettles were brought by the Romans.
I did not know that.
Absolute bastards.
Yeah.
Hang on. We have the Romans to thank for stinging nettles.
Yeah.
What have the Romans ever done for us?
Bastards.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a bunch of that.
Indeed. So, shall we have a question?
Sure.
Go on.
We have many questions. I got people to send in some stuff today. And I'll be honest, I wasn't entirely happy with the quality of the questions.
Okay.
But, you know, we can be
I
the judge of that.
It reflects the quality of the guest.
Oh, come on, Nick.
The
spirit, I mean.
Reflects the quality of the presenters, but yeah.
All right, okay. So anyway, we have a question from Tim Carter at Tim24Frames on the Twitters. It says, in honour of the Irishman trailer, which De Niro characters would you most and least like to grab a beer or... The three of us are non-alcoholic. Well, actually, James, you don't even drink either.
Not really, no.
Or, you know, or a non-alcoholic beverage with. Let's see. Which De Niro characters would you most and least like to grab a beer with?
I kind of like the De Niro and Silver Linings Playbook.
Oh, okay.
Wow,
yeah,
good call.
That's an interesting choice.
Yeah. He's a fun one. Well, he's fun. He's a good dad and... He's a nice De Niro. I like watching that one.
Yeah.
I wish he was my dad.
Someone like De Niro in The Intern.
Yeah,
do you want to grab a beer with that guy? Because he'll stamp on your face. And...
But only if you disrespect him.
Would you I wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't either. But
no.
You know, I get it. It would be exciting.
Briefly.
Right? You'd feel like you'd go home and say, oh my God, that was amazing. They were, you know... There were so many women called Maria, and
there were guys being stomped on left, right, and centre. Managed to avoid it. Helen, who would you?
Well, the one in the intern would give you good advice, so that's worth remembering. But I have to say, Captain Shakespeare from Stardust.
You have to say that.
I do have to say that
because
I feel
contractual?
Like he'd be most fun. Like, and you know, he could do a little show in his dress afterwards.
I wouldn't want to go out with a taxi driver.
No, that would. I think we can all agree, right?
Yeah.
Bickle would be bad company. I think the one I'd least like to have a drink with is Jack from Meet the Parents. I feel that would be very stressful.
Are you worried that you'd essentially do what Ben Stiller does in the movie and just start talking nonsense about
Absolutely.
Cat's nipples?
Like, yeah, I've got nipples, James. Could you milk me? No, I don't. I wouldn't want to do that. Who would I most like? I'd quite like to go out with Neil McCauley from Heat. That would be quite. That'd be quite an interesting.
Or just have a coffee in a cafe.
Yeah, a little bit like that. Or you know, is it Sammy? Who's the guy who plays in Ronan? Is it Sam? I forget. Anyway, the guy who plays in Ronan.
Yeah.
So we could talk about the boathouse at the, you know.
What's the colour of the boathouse in Hereford?
That's right.
And correct him on his pronunciation.
Yes, Hereford.
Yeah, because he goes...
That's what you want to do.
He goes Hereford, not Hereford.
Unbelievable.
Nick, have you ever had the pleasure?
Of meeting Robert De Niro?
Yeah.
No, never.
That's good. Okay, well, thanks.
I don't know what I'd be. I'm going to join the show. I don't know. I think I'd be really nervous, you know. You know,
yeah.
I think I'd be really nervous.
You've had the opportunity to meet a few people over the last few years.
Yeah, but I'm still a fan of film, you know. Mm. I'll still be like, oh, it's fucking Robert De Niro, you know.
Who has made you the most starstruck?
Like Angela Hartnett, the chef.
Really?
Because I like chefs, you know. I admire what they did. And I went and had lunch like 4 years ago at one of her restaurants. And then she came out and was like, fucking Angela Hartnett. yeah, like, who else? Like, I think the England rugby team sat next to me the other day in a coffee shop in Twickenham.
Okay.
And I had my baby with me, and they all kind of went, they all kind of nodded. I don't know. I mean, I guess usually people, I get that they're all people, right? Mm. But I think someone like De Niro or.
Yeah.
I mean, Sigourney a bit. When me and Greg Mottola went to meet her before we cast her in Paul, and like we were, I think I told you this before, but we were sat in like a place in Hollywood, and me and Greg Mottola and her were having lunch, and she was eating a chicken Caesar salad, and I was just like, just looking at her, like eating an anchovy, and then looking around and thinking, oh, this is amazing, you know?
Yeah.
And then texting Simon saying, I just want Sigourney to eat a fucking Caesar salad. She's amazing, you know. But I don't know, like a lot of people there.
Yeah.
It's still, people and they're afraid too and bored and nervous and anxious and, you know.
And eat Caesar salad.
Yeah.
Exactly. No dressing on the side.
Interesting.
Healthy. Yeah.
Do you find it goes away after a while when you work with these people? Like, say, working with Sigourney, like a week into Paul. Does that go away for you?
I think you start to, as a person, you get to judge what you can get away with. And then I think usually my editing suite is off, so I say things and then you see them react and you think, oh, that was a good reaction, that, you know. And then I think people realise that, you know, you're honest or... Mm. They like the fact you're a bit of a dick, or you say things people don't say, or and then you know, people either warm to that or don't, and then that way you know.
What about Spielberg though?
Oh, he was amazing. Yeah. I wasn't nervous with Steven. I was like, you know, he's directed the best of the films I've loved the most in my life, really. You know, as a child, as a young man, just having to sit and listen to him talk about Close Encounters was like an absolute dream.
How much of that did you prompt? Because you're a massive Close Encounters fan, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. You didn't have to prompt a lot, really. But he just chats about it. You know, Simon was a prompter and I'd sit and you know, harvest that prompt. But I got like, years ago, I found a first edition novelization of Spielberg's novel of Close Encounters that he'd written.
Oh, wow.
And I found it in a junk shop, and I paid, like, you know, when I was 16, and paid like a fiver for it.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, 25 years later, I gave him it to sign and stuff, because you can give Stephen things to sign on the last day, and he signed it. So I gave him that, and he was like, oh my God, this is incredible. I don't think he'd seen one for ages, so I've got like a first edition signed.
Oh my God.
And, you know, he says something really lovely in it.
Oh.
But I think what I love is in the novelization, it explains that the big organ they play at the end, the synthesizer, you see the FBI or the CIA go and they knock on a door and Stevie Wonder opens, and it's his organ that they take because it's the most technically advanced organ in the world. And so the thing they play at the end is Stevie Wonder's synthesizer.
How did that not make the final cut?
Yeah, no.
Amazing. Yeah,
maybe they could go and shoot and drop that in. Maybe they shot it. Maybe they did shoot
the other director's cut.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Should we have another question?
Yeah.
At Ian999 asks, you're stranded on a desert island. Oh no. Which Police Academy movie do you have as your only source of entertainment? You
got six to choose from. Under Siege.
Whoa, straight in there with number six.
Yeah. I want it to be awful. I want to seem cheery by what's around me if I have to.
A reminder that it's worth fighting to get home.
Yes. Or you could use it to dig a shelter in the sand. What format is it on?
Oh, that's a very good question.
Yeah, because if
almost
it was,
certainly.
But if it was streaming, like, you'd be
well,
shit
I'd
out
probably
of luck.
Use that. I'd unspool the tape and hang myself from a coconut tree.
If it was streaming, that means you'd have internet connection, so therefore you would just get online
you'd
and go
watch something.
But what if you had no way of like sending? You only could like
just receiving.
Receive. Yeah. Stream.
Well, like all you had was like a Fimeo password, Gutenberg with a 3 in place of the E, and that was it. But he's not even in that film.
No, he's not.
No,
ridiculous, terrible. Ridiculous. All right, so I'm going to say DVD because we don't want you to hang yourself with the VHS.
You could cut your wrist with the disc.
Yeah,
that's very true, isn't it?
But there's probably other sharp things on the island.
That's true.
Cinema is so fucking dangerous.
It is.
Really dangerous. Helen, what would you do? What would you watch? What would you have?
The number that came to mind is 4, but I literally can't even remember the subtitles.
Citizens on Patrol.
Yeah. Citizens on Patrol. Yeah, okay, that was a good one.
It was a
no, bad one?
It was a film.
It wasn't great. Kim Cattrall's in that, right?
Is she in that one?
No, Sharon Stone's in that one.
Mm. What's Cattrall in?
Cattrall's in One.
In One?
Yeah.
She's in One.
Yeah. Did you get a meter on Horrible Histories? Okay, brilliant. Thanks for coming in next
Cheers, guys.
Well, I feel like Operation Miami Beach would be a bit too on the nose because you're on a beach. So I'd say Mission to Moscow just for the contrast.
Oh, that's nice.
Might cool you down.
Because it would cool you down, exactly that.
Yeah, I have to say I made a mistake. I said very, very quickly earlier on, but you've got 6 to choose from. You've got 7 to choose from. I forgot about that. Yeah, Mission to Moscow is the 7th one. Mm. And I apologise to all Police Academy fans out there.
But of course, the answer always is the first one on account of it being an actually good film, which cannot be said of any of the others.
Yeah.
Two's all right.
A better film.
Two's all right.
A better film.
Yeah.
One's a bit racy, isn't it? With, you know, the boobs and the swearing and stuff.
It is.
Yeah. It was a different time back then.
It was.
It was. The Blue Oyster sequences seem a little bit.
That's not aged brilliantly, has it?
They really haven't.
Dated.
I've said this in the podcast before, but Police Academy is the film I've seen most, I think, in my life.
That is not something you should admit to.
Is that
to.
True?
Is
wow.
It true? Just the boob bit or the whole film?
Oh, there's more than the boob bit? In that case, no. No, the entire film. When I was a kid, I watched that a lot. Mm. A lot. But I think probably the ITV version. So, mm-hmm. Nick, what's the film you've seen most in cinema?
I probably have to say Schindler's List. No, Close Encounters.
Really?
Yeah, I've probably seen it 150 times. I mean, realistically.
How have you seen a film 150 times?
Not in the cinema, but just in my life.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm 50 almost.
That's a lot.
I've been watching it for 39 years, you know.
A few times a year, it adds up, yeah.
No, easily.
I reckon I've seen Star Wars that many times, the first one.
Yeah.
Because it was the only VHS tape I had as a kid, so it was not. I wasn't spoiled for choice. So it was literally that or just sit and read a book and...
Well, yeah, or a book about Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah. Which I also had. Alan Dean Foster. Just saying.
Not written by Steve, I nearly called him Steve. Steve Spielberg.
Yeah.
I think he prefers Stevie.
Stevie. Yes. Stevie S. All right, I'll find one more question, then we'll head on
probably
to...
Probably should have pre-found these.
To movie. You say that. You say that.
It's radio gold.
It's all right, we'll cut the spit out.
It's not like when totally I do the fine. Total Film podcast.
Oh, yeah. They're well prepared.
They're great.
Those guys.
You get to keep the aircon on.
Those guys. All right, okay. I'm being pressurized into choosing a question. This may not even be the best question, but I've gone for it. All right. At not Marcus B, which underappreciated co-stars should get more love?
What, in the world of film?
Yeah.
Me?
Nick Frost says Nick Frost.
I don't know.
Have you ever met Nick Frost?
He is a jerk. who? I have no idea. Why don't you guys...
So are we talking like... What are we talking about here? Are we talking about
someone says
character actors?
Yeah, like, let's go character
actors. What's co-stars?
I guess this is a 27%ers question, isn't it?
So we call it 27%, right?
Mm.
So the character actors who make every film they're in 27% better.
Oh, I see. Right.
Like Nick Frost.
It's probably one of the women, actually. Do you know what I mean? Because the men are appreciated character actors, and I don't think we talk as much about the ladies.
Yeah.
Maya Rudolph.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Margot Martindale.
Good call.
Mm. Okay. And out. I'm going to say and out. Or failing at Julia Roberts.
Yeah, nobody ever talks about her.
I don't think people talk about her enough.
Where's she gone?
I don't know.
What happened to her?
Last I heard, she was doing some streaming TV
Homecoming
show.
She?
You know?
Can you imagine? Season 2 is being developed.
Can you imagine?
She's not in it.
No.
All right, okay.
I just watched, I mean, as everyone did, the new Stranger Things, and I loved Winona.
Yeah. Really good.
I kind of refound a thing in me that said, oh, she's lovely, you know. I think, you know, seeing the awards last time and thinking she'd gone bonkers, but...
No.
And I watched it and it was like, ah, she's great, you know.
Where would you have placed season 3 vis-a-vis the other two?
I thought it was my favourite. It was just fun.
It was the summer setting, wasn't it?
It was nice and
yeah.
I liked the relationship. I love Brett Gelman. Yeah, I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Great. All right. I think it was a lot of fun too.
Last question before we move on is from at Trickster 1966, favourite biscuit? Ooh. Nick, I'm going to start with
oh
you.
My god, right now every biscuit every biscuit is my favourite. Well, historically, I don't know, I literally am thinking about every biscuit in the world. I like a fruit shortcake.
Good choice.
Oh,
really? We had them in the office yesterday.
They just, when I see biscuits too, they're just, for me, it's like I can literally drink a whole cup of tea with biscuits and not drink any tea. Just it's that they all go in via a biscuit, which is why I'm in the problem I'm in now. Yeah, there are these things that I'm given to eat now every day. It's like essentially just bags of shitty dust and bricks that I can eat six of these a day and as much cabbage as you want. But there's one of them, which comes like a silver foil pack. And it's essentially a strawberry thing, which they've coated in. I'm assuming it's yogurt, but it may not be yogurt.
Don't send it to the
it's
lab.
It's a yogurt style smarm.
It's rumour of yogurt. It's,
yeah. I fucking can't get enough of that shit. They're amazing. They're only little, but I'm like, oh my God. I was saying to the lady that kind of runs this thing, can I just eat six of them a day? Is that... She's, well, I mean, yeah, I guess in theory you could, but... You know, you'd go blind. You're meant to eat other bits and pieces.
But that would help with the weight loss regime, wouldn't it, if you were blind?
What, you just
I mean,
if, find the food.
Yeah. I mean, only if I was in a pie and mash shop, I suppose.
Helen, what's your favourite biscuit?
Like, again, all of them. It's kind of my answer.
Yeah, everything Nick just said.
Yeah, I've got a chocolate chip cookie recipe that is genuinely great. And anytime I make,
you
can, make
no,
this
no,
amazing.
you can't have a homemade biscuit. That's cheating.
Why not?
It has to be a branded.
Fine, then an M&S Belgian chocolate.
Oh, how middle class are you?
Cookie.
Oh my god!
Damn right,
disgusting.
Yeah. Oh, they're so amazing. There's also a flavor of Oreo they do in America called cinnamon bun Oreos.
Ooh.
Oh,
they're kind
that.
Of they're like a custard cream with a bit of cinnamon in it.
I'm interested,
not for
but
me.
Slightly disgusted.
So good, honestly.
Honestly, like, I'm quite old school. Like, I love a chocolate digestive. I love a chocolate hobnob. I go for either of those. But generally speaking, the classic ginger nut is my go-to.
Nice biscuit.
But, and this is me being slightly middle class, if I want to go the extra mile, not the ginger nut, but like the, you know, sort of Waitrose stem ginger posh biscuit, you know, where there's only like 10 in a packet.
Oh, and you had a go at me.
And they're like 150 calories per biscuit. Those. Mm. They are brilliant dunkers because the stem ginger kind of crystallises in the tea.
Right.
I highly recommend them.
I don't know, if I'm having like a Nescafe, I like a digestive.
Mm. No chocolate, just plain, straight
about
up.
That combination. Mm. And every now and again you'll get one, like in a piece of Parmesan that's got a little salty crisp in it. A little, like a crystal of salt. You'd be like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Ever a rich tea?
No. Oh, well, yeah. if nothing else is available. Yeah.
But the thing is,
if I'm feeling suicidal, if I'm feeling the devil may care, then maybe.
Things, they're called rich tea as if they're for dunking, but those fuckers disintegrate the second they touch the liquid. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
And they're not rich.
I don't
they're
dunk.
Not rich.
I don't dunk.
No.
You don't dunk.
I don't dunk.
Why?
What's wrong with you?
I'm not a tea guy.
That's
true. You don't do hot drinks, and you can't really dunk it in Coke.
You can't dunk it into a bottle of Coke. It's difficult. It's too big. The correct answer, by the way, is plain chocolate digestive.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't.
Oh, plain chocolate digestive thins. Really
oh my
great.
God.
Okay, what is happening?
I can go through a whole pack of those. But anyway.
Which defeats the object.
It does.
It does.
Isn't it?
Massively defeats the object.
They are misnamed. Yeah.
Oh, well. If you want to have your question read out on the Empire podcast and treat it with the respect it deserves, you can get in touch with us via a number of methods. We're on Twitter as @EmpireMagazine. Use the hashtag EmpirePodcast. Or chances are we won't see it. You can Facebook us as well. And you can email us podcast@empireonline.com. Nick, are you on Twitter much these days?
Twitter, not really. I do still have a thing that's open, and I'm I went back the other day to do a bit, but it just got me down. Everything I looked at made me really sad.
Yeah.
Because so many times I can see Steve Bannon and and Farage and all that lot, and I just think, why aren't we?
Yeah, they don't show up on Instagram.
Why aren't we turning cars over in the street and going house to house to, you know, crush this vile filth?
Yeah, it feels like the world's a bit fucked. But when you're on Twitter, it feels like we're living in Escape from New York. Like it's
But now I'm not there. It's like, oh, I get it. It's not as tinderbox as I imagined. You know, society is actually made to look worse.
Mm.
I'm hoping.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm on Instagram. I love Instagram. You know,
there's a lot of food porn, which I imagine if you're restricted in what you can eat, Instagram can be quite problematic.
If you were to look at what I've liked in the last 2 months,
in lieu of eating, I'm liking all
of this. Pizza and.
I do the same. I follow a lot of cake accounts and I'll watch videos of like cake icing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's very soothing.
American. Just cheese, New York style pizza for me right now. I'm like, oh my god, really? Kill me, yeah.
How's the cooking going these days?
Yeah, good. Yeah, I'm still cooking a lot. I mean, I'm finding that I'm cooking a lot to feed others so I can watch that being enjoyed and take some tacit enjoyment from others.
That's interesting. You're still, you know, I don't watch Saturday Kitchen every week religiously, but you're still the only guest I've ever seen who actually got involved in the cooking side of things, and you actually wanted to help out in the kitchen.
Well, I wanted to do the omelette challenge, but they got really weird. They were like, oh, we don't have enough magnetic omelettes. I said, oh, right, and that's, okay, fine. Because it's like, well, I imagine if a guest wanted to do it, you'd say, oh, all right, you know, why don't you do it this week and, you know, one of the chefs cannot do it.
Yeah. They'll be back on again.
Yeah, we've only got so many magnetic omelettes.
We've only got one fridge, I'm afraid. Sorry.
Whatever.
What would you have done? What would your approach have been? Would you have gone for the try to break the record, or would you have taken the Wolfgang Puck approach and gone for
No, I always imagined that I'd just smash the eggs straight into the pan, butter, obviously not with the shells, and then just do it that way. Doing a lot of omelettes right now.
Really?
In my house, because my girlfriend loves omelettes too, and they're kind of my thing. I bought a couple of pans just specifically for omelettes.
Oh, my God.
You know, it's simple. I can eat omelettes.
Mm-hmm.
Hayley loves omelettes.
Yeah.
A little bit of Parmesan. Let's do that thing with a pan where you just knock the bottom so they folds over on itself.
Yeah.
It's nice.
A little bit of powdery strawberry yogurt biscuit on top of that. Just
inside melting. Yeah.
That's the real stuff right there. Right there.
That's all
right.
Exciting.
Should we talk about some movie news now?
Sure.
Some lovely movie news, things that have happened. And Nick, if you want to chip in, you can chip in. If you know, there may be some things that pertain to you.
All right.
In fact, something that was announced today, as a matter of fact.
Was it?
It was The Nevers.
Oh, yes.
Congratulations on The Nevers.
Thanks very much.
It's very exciting. Joss Whedon's new show.
Yeah.
Which I, for the longest time, thought was called The Nethers.
Yeah.
Which would have been a very different type of show.
Yes. Mm. I was really late for my meeting with him. Not my fault, just terrible traffic. Just turned up. I was sick. My kids were sick. I was late. I was like, oh my God, this is not going to go well.
Mm.
And it didn't go great. I mean, but then I got a phone call saying, hey, it was great. He loved you. I was like, oh, okay. I didn't, you know, we just chatted. There was no kind of process. But, you know, he's really lovely. I like talking to him a lot. I like hanging out with him.
Yeah.
And then I went and did my first day a few weeks ago. And I think you get a sense when you walk on set how much money some of it's got. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you walk on, you think, oh, there's like 80% more horse-drawn carts than I've ever seen in anything I've ever done. I think, oh, yeah, this is going to be great, you know. Everyone's lovely. He's lovely. He knows what he wants. He's, you know, I don't think I've ever done one day, but I don't think I've ever been so, you know, minutely directed as to exactly what he wants me to portray in terms of what that character's thinking, you know.
Okay.
Oh,
which is kind of great.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh,
but
man.
It's very specific. Which is also, you know, it's great trying to find that. You know.
So this is a show about a group of Victorian women. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but
you say, because I don't want to say too much.
I don't want to get you into trouble at all. And they acquire powers, and they call themselves the Touched, and they set out to do. There's a mission that might just change the world. There are people who are railing against them, and it was announced today you're playing a character called the Beggar King.
Yeah.
Mm.
What can you say anything about that?
Just you know. The older I've become and the kind of skinheadier, bearded, meaner SOB I'm starting to look like as I'm getting older. I'm not like roly-poly gun mad Mike anymore. There are times when I look like a lunatic.
Like it could fuck shit up.
Yeah, I kind of like the way that my career's going in terms of that. You know, I always thought, oh, it'd be great to play a lunatic. So I'm kind of at that point. So it's good. I really like it. I've never played like a proper killer before.
This sounds like it could make an interesting double bill with Rotten Romans. If you were so inclined. Jimbo, you must be, and Helen, in fact, you're both massive mm-hmm. Whedonites, so mm-hmm. you must be very excited about it.
Very much here for it.
It's been too long.
Yeah.
Far too long. So yes, very much. If Olivia Williams in it, very exciting.
Yeah.
It's got a great cast.
Yeah, so also James Norton, Tom Riley, Anne Skelly, Ben Chaplin, Pip Torrens, Zachary Momo, Amy Manson, Rochelle Neal, Eleanor Tomlinson, and Dennis O'Hare.
Yeah, how do you know this?
I'm literally reading them all.
Oh, I see.
It's savant like Helen.
You're incredible.
There's been some other TV, so we go from The Beggar King to The Bowery King, although not quite, but there's the content.
Seamless.
Yeah,
that's a
seamless segue.
Oh, great segue. So this is the Continental, which is the series spin-off from John Wick, mm-hmm. which apparently is going to be a prequel set a long time before the films. I guess isn't a huge surprise. Did anyone see? Did you see Deadly Class at all? Which got cancelled, so I won't worry about it.
You told me it was terrible, so...
But it's the first episode's great, but it kind of goes downhill. But that felt a little bit like a John Wick-y prequel in that it had that similar sort of altered fantasy world element to Killing to it.
Okay.
And actually, it felt like they shared some DNA there, but that did get cancelled, so it's irrelevant. But this will be an actual official prequel to John Wick, sort of centred around the Continental Hotel. It's looking like it will probably arrive after John Wick Chapter 4 now, so probably about 2021.
Okay. So I'm not a prequel person generally, but I guess if it's far enough back and loosely enough connected. So what?
This is based in 1870.
Obviously that will work. Well,
Ian McShane looking exactly the same.
I believe that. So the Barry King though is in it by the
No, probably not, but I'll just use that as a segue.
Oh, I see.
But maybe. There may be a young Lawrence Fishburne. Who knows?
Let's have a look at the clip.
I'm pretty excited about that. Who watched the Irishman trailer?
Yeah, it was great.
Excited,
wasn't it? But did you see any of the magic de-aging in the trailer?
Yes.
I mean, bear in mind, I was watching it over eight people's shoulders, but I was like,
means it's worked if you've asked the question.
It looked like them.
That's the point, isn't it?
Well, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what I was expecting. I was expecting, like Magneto and Professor X, that kind of like really weird, like, oh, God, what's happening?
How many episodes is it?
Oh, it's a film.
It's a film.
It's a proper film. So one episode, I guess.
So it's one episode.
Just the one.
It's one 120-minute episode.
Yeah.
It's funny because when he puts that ring on, he says, there's only three people in the world with this ring. I have exactly the same ring.
So you're one of
mine
three.
Mine's a sovereign. Mine's got a sovereign in it. But it's exactly the same thing. It's exactly the same mount. My girlfriend's even saying, that's the old ring. That's the same ring.
So we now know two of the three. Who's the other one?
I don't know.
Wow, this is like Lord of the Rings all over again. Yes. Who's got the third elven ring?
That's right.
That I did not know.
It's obviously Gandalf.
Yeah, it is obviously Gandalf. Nick Frost, Gandalf, and Robert De Niro. It looks really great, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does.
So it's De Niro, Pacino, Pesci. I think Harvey Keitel's in it as well, but we didn't see him in the trailer.
Oh, my God.
Stephen
Graham.
Stephen Graham's in it. Oh, my God, yeah. It's an embarrassment of riches. Ray Romano, rare, serious role. I'm very excited about this movie.
What about the ladies?
Well, it's a...
Howling Wasteland, obviously.
Any ladies?
I mean...
Anna Paquin appears in the trailer.
Yes, she is in the trailer.
She looks worried at one point.
She might be a wife.
She's a daughter.
A daughter?
I thought maybe a daughter.
A girlfriend. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, at least she's clearly defined and has a strong, independent character.
A vibrant
character.
Inner life.
Yes. Not so much a child, right,
who's a woman.
Yes.
Yeah. A girl.
See, I thought she grew up to be Anna Paquin. That's what I thought I was watching, so but I am reading entirely into that. I don't know.
Yeah, like, okay. I'm going to work. I was like, whoa, he's going to kill. His work means killing.
Yeah.
Because he paints houses, but that means killing.
Yeah.
Is he?
Is he painting them all red, basically?
Yeah, pretty much.
Human plasma.
Yeah.
I am deeply, 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 deeply excited about this movie.
When's it out?
It's out at the end of September at the New York Film Festival. That's where it's going to receive its big world premiere. You know, New York, De Niro. Yay. And then it's going to be on Netflix.
Wow.
So you can watch it in the comfort of your own home in your boxer shorts, if should you so desire. Oh. Don't know if you're a boxers guy, Nick. You might be. You might not be.
No, I'm not. No.
Okay. I feel I've stepped over across the line.
No, you're right.
Yeah, very, very excited about
that. I get a lot of my underwear from Bangladesh. Got it off Amazon. It comes in packs of 10. That's it.
All right, excellent. De Niro and Scorsese, you're going to team up again?
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting. That's revealed today.
After The Irishman.
They hadn't worked together since 1995 in Casino.
They've got some catching up to do, basically.
They do.
Yeah.
And this is going to be based on the David Gran novel. It's a non-fiction novel, so it's a true story. Obviously, that's what non-fiction means. And it's about the Osage Nation, who were Native Americans. And in the Oklahoma of 1920s, oil was discovered under the land, making them the richest people per capita in the US. And then someone started bumping them off.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Someone started murdering them one by one. And the FBI got in the case as well. A very notorious case. And DiCaprio's going to be in it also. So it's DiCaprio, De Niro, Scorsese.
It's almost too much acting.
It's a battle of the muses.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, it's relentless acting. Isn't it?
It's going to be so much musing, though. Like, Scorsese won't know which way to look, you know?
Sharing a cab with all that acting. Intense, wouldn't it?
Without naming names, you must have had that in your career as well, when you're in a scene with someone who is really giving it their all. I mean, really properly acting.
In a bad way, but...
In a bad way, in a way that maybe...
I don't know. I don't think I have. I think I've been lucky enough to work with people who can judge the mood of the scene and not just come in going crazy that... I mean, I've seen someone do something in a scene and I've caught eyes with another actor as if to say, are you fucking seeing this? or I've caught the first AD's eye during a scene and just said, is this good? And then them having to kind of turn away and... I don't know.
Because everyone's different, right? Everyone has different methods and different approaches.
Yeah, but I think a lot of things I've done have been fairly... they haven't been... big performance pieces where you have to be big, I think a lot of stuff we do is kind of natural and small and quiet and a bit Kevin Smithy, so to then have someone come in and start to perform, it seems odd, but then, I mean, Tim Dalton in Hot Fuzz was big, but his character was big, it was great watching that, because it was so like, good. This is him,
Here come the fuzz, so good.
He was Arch, he had to be Arch.
Absolutely, oh my God.
So good in that.
Love that movie. Just a couple of last things to talk about real quick. So they're looking for a director for Venom 2, because they ain't going to direct itself, although it looks like the first one did. Anyway, Ruben Fleischer is busy on Zombieland Double Tap, and there are three names apparently on the shortlist.
Three names.
It's exciting.
Exciting. Have they
those
told us?
Names
who?
Are, yes. Okay. Yes. Well, they haven't told us, but someone leaked it. Someone. So those names are Andy Serkis.
Intriguing.
Travis Knight. Mm-hmm. And Rupert Wyatt. What do you make of that? If you had to choose one of those, who would it be and why?
I think Andy Serkis could maybe bring some comedy touch to it. I feel like Travis Knight should be doing something.
Because of how famously funny Breathe and the Jungle Book the movie film were.
Be harsh.
I'm not being harsh. I'm just saying
he's
that,
a really funny guy.
He's a lovely guy.
And maybe he'd like to show that.
Okay.
Well, I think it would be... It's one of these things where I didn't think Venom was good. So there's a part of me that doesn't want Andy to do it. Because I feel like what happened with his Jungle Book film was... unfortunate, and I'm not sure what you want to do to save that is go on to Venom 2, which may make a load of money and be really successful, but it's also Venom 2.
But equally, I want Travis Knight to be busy with better things as
well. Yeah, but because he's at this point not going to make a Bumblebee film, which again is a shame because he did a really good job with that film. It just didn't make the money. So I don't know. This is tough. This is a poison chalice, but admittedly one filled with money.
It's a poison chalice
made of gold.
It is. Nick, it's not too late to throw your hat in the ring.
Yeah, do it. A shit.
Did you watch Venom? Did you say
no.
Did you hear the song? The Eminem song?
I haven't done any of it.
Fair enough.
You're not missing.
I think you would bring an interesting and fresh take to this. it'd be really rare for a director just go, I
don't give a shit.
Is it that rare?
I'm not sure it is. Yeah, I'm over that kind of stuff. I've got kids. I've got a baby and... sometimes I go to bed when it goes to bed. You know what I mean? At like 7 o'clock, sometimes I go to bed. So I'm just in that point right now. Also, creatively, I'm like, get it, good luck, but...
Yeah. Sounds like something you should do when you go to bed at 7 in the evening is listen to our 4-hour Avengers Endgame spoiler special podcast.
Yeah.
Sounds like it might be right up your street.
I'd love it. If I needed to go to sleep, I'd love it.
Last thing to talk about is Luca Guadagnino. His new... Not what?
Yeah, we haven't talked about Olivia Wilde.
Well, all right, okay. Talk about Olivia Wilde.
Olivia Wilde's directing another film after Booksmart, which was a bit of a worry because Booksmart is brilliant, but nobody went to see it. And yeah, so she's getting the chance to direct again, and apparently she's now attached to star in and direct a film called Don't Worry, Darling, which is described as a psychological thriller about a 50s housewife whose reality begins to crack.
Oh, let's have a look at a clip. She's lovely, by the way.
Is she?
Yeah, oh, we had a nice meeting, her and I, one evening. We went and had drinks when potentially she was going to be the Rashida character in Cuban Fury. Before Rashida got cast. And we kind of got a bit tipsy and it was fun. And she's a lovely woman.
Mm. I'm glad.
Did you see Booksmart?
I didn't.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's
really, really, I mean, nobody did, judging by the box office, but it is so
fun. We gave
so
it five stars, well
maybe
deserved.
That's not what it's about, right?
Well, no, exactly. But I do think it's going to have, like, such a long life. I feel like, you know, every teenager for the next 30 years is going to watch this thing. But
like
nobody saw it in cinemas. Yeah, actually, yeah. Or, like, going back to John Hughes, like, I honestly feel like it's on that level.
Oh, great.
It's really good.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that. She's also got a Christmas movie in the works as well. Have you seen this?
No.
Over at Netflix, I'm not quite sure which one she's going to do first, but this sounds cool. And then Luca Guadagnino is going to direct a new version of Lord of the Flies.
Mm. Mm. There was talk of a girl Lord of the Flies, which was widely laughed at.
Yes.
I feel like I'm right in saying.
This
so this would not be that.
Lady of the Flies.
Yeah. Actually, that would have been a better title, at least.
It would have been, yeah.
I think it would also be a shorter film, so then the girls would just kill each other really quickly.
Yeah.
With ruthless efficiency. Yeah.
There wouldn't be any violence, just like a...
Just really cutting words.
Passive-aggressive.
Really.
So cutting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just heavily criticising each other's coconut bras.
Oh, my God.
It's an island. That's what that was about.
Or watching Police Academy 6, City Under Siege, just
what
going
format?
Slowly nuts.
That's
the thing. No, this is going to be going back to the original text.
Okay.
As they say.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of on board with that. He's obviously brilliant, the recent Suspiria remake aside. So, yeah, I think this is pretty fertile ground.
All right.
Well, not really. There's not that much growing on the desert.
Oh, that's a very, very good point. Yeah. It's and obviously, they won't be able to. Yeah. Okay.
It's volcanic.
Yeah.
And there are pigs on the island, so there must be some kind of ecosystem.
Yeah. Mm. All right. Well,
all right. Cool.
That's exciting stuff. At this point, this means we can let Mr. Nick Frost go. But I can't let you go because I've barricaded the door. No, but mainly, I've got to ask you very quickly about Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, go on.
Because it's 15 years old.
Is it?
Yeah.
God.
Does it feel 15 years old to you?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, no. I don't know. It's just a thing and it's part of a thing, another thing. Most of the memories I have of that now are looking at pictures and thinking, oh, we did that. Or, you know, someone said something to me the other day. I was like, did we? You know, I think I remember I was showing off to some people on set and there was like a beetle on a wall and I put it in my mouth and then it decided to bite my tongue.
Ooh.
And then I couldn't get it off my tongue. And then everyone laughed. I remember that. I remember that, you know.
Do you remember specific days? Do you remember
some of it?
The doppelganger day, for example, where it's you and everyone, you know, Lucas and Reese and...
Yeah, look, I mean, I was terrified in most of that shoot that I was going to be found out. And, you know, I just wanted to do a good job and I wanted the crew to like me and... You know, I wanted it to be a good film and I wanted Edgar to be proud and just to not fuck up, you know. that's what most of my days were about, really.
This seems like a strange question, but at what point did you realise that you hadn't fucked up, that you weren't fucking up?
Was it the second season of Into the Badlands? you know, I don't know. I mean, it's difficult when you've got children because it's not... I need to do this now forever.
Yeah.
And it has to be viable financially. And, you know, there are some things. I turned a thing down like 3 years ago, which had so much money. No one's had ever come to me with that before. And I had to say no because I had like 2 weeks to mull it over and there wasn't one morning where I woke up and I thought, this is what I want to do every morning.
Mm.
The bit inside me said, don't fucking do it, you know.
Yeah.
But I had to try and push that down and think, but the money is kind of...
Yeah.
But now you think, I've got two kids now and, you know, I'd hate to get to a point in my career when, what do I do if I'm not acting and I'm 60 years old, you know. What do my children do?
Is this one of the reasons why you and Simon launched Stolen Picture? You're taking control of your own destiny.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of it. I mean, but even still, that needs to be successful. If you, you know, you have a company and it's shit and you don't make anything, then that company's worth nothing. I don't know, how long have we all got left? I just need to make sure that I do nice things with good people and make sure that my lot are financially secure for the rest of their lives. That's my aim, and that's what keeps me going, I think.
But Nick, we'll let you get back to what's important.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you.
You know, listen.
I'm hoping, I've got to say, this is also part of being a dad. By the time I get in the taxi and drive across town, I think I'm going to be too late for bed and bath. So you get to that thing where even if you get to a point where you think, I could still make it, there's part of me that says to the driver, hey, will you hang back a bit just so Amelia has to put him to bed? There's, you know, that kind of thing where there is still a lazy Ed inside me where if he can get away with not doing bed and bath one night, then yeah, I'll probably try and do that.
Oh, man. Well, I felt guilty about holding you back from bed and bath, but now we're doing a service. It's all good.
We're good.
Brilliant. Nick, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
So that was Nick Frost. He has now left the building. Lovely guy.
He is.
And we didn't ask him to stick around for the reviews. We never ask anyone to stick around for the reviews because we feel that that would be unprofessional. And frankly, we don't ask people to shit where they eat.
We really don't. Let us emphasise that would,
I mean,
be
we
bad.
Prefer them not to shit in the podcast at all.
Yeah. Eating is okay.
Yes.
We are happy with people eating in the podcast studio, but shitting?
It's a hard pass.
Never again.
Yeah.
Just that one time.
Just that one time. Everyone experiments in podcasts and it didn't go down well.
Oh no.
Didn't go down well. It doesn't work in an audio medium, apparently. Anyway, hello. Welcome to the review section of the podcast. So this is where we talk about movies that have come out or about to come out. And one of those movies is a film called... Now, I can't get the title of this movie in my head. It was announced as Hobbs and Shaw. Then it became Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw.
No, now I think it's Furious just Presents.
Fast and Furious Presents. That's a Christmas movie. Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw. And now I think it's just Fast and Furious
colon
Hobbs and Shaw.
Hobbs versus Shaw.
No.
Dawn of Cypher.
It's an and.
What is it now?
Ampersand. I believe it is Fast and Furious colon Hobbs ampersand Shaw. Yeah.
I liked Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw.
Oh, I think it felt too corporate.
I feel like that it does say that on screen at one point.
I'm pretty sure that is.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it is. It's Fast and Furious Hobbs and Shaw. That's what it said. I'm sure that's what the title said.
I did a spoiler special for this movie, interview with the director of the film, David Leitch. And we spent a long time in that podcast interview talking about the name of the movie. And even then, I don't think either of us know what it is.
Mm. Brilliant.
I think this has been a relatively late stage change.
Yes. So. But we should focus less on the Fast and Furious portion of the title and more on the Hobbs and Shaw portion of this title.
Should we?
Nick, what do you think of it? Oh, he's gone. So Hobbs and Shaw, this is the ninth film in the Fast and Furious franchise. It is the first spin-off.
The Rogue One, if you will. Star Wars story.
Yeah, make of that what you will. And so this is the first movie that breaks away from the Mothership franchise and has Dwayne Johnson as Luke Hobbs, Man Mountain, all-round good egg.
Correct.
Honest, noble cop of sorts. Never quite sure what he does.
Parodically blue-collar American hero man.
Yes.
Yes.
American Samoan, of course.
Yes. Which is significant.
It is significant. And Jason Statham's Deckard Shaw, the artist formerly known as Ian Shaw, if you go back and check the credits of Fast 6, I'm pretty sure it's Ian Shaw in those, and who has been heavily retconned, shall we say. Starts off as a bad guy in the Fast and Furious franchise, and then people realised that they quite enjoyed the Stath, so they stuck with him, stuck him into Fast 8, turned him into a hero, and now the two of them are teaming up to save the world from Idris Elba.
The Black Superman.
That's right.
In this film.
His words.
Brixton. Yes, his words, not ours.
Yes.
Sorry, what was his full name, James?
Brixton.
And his surname is?
Brixton.
Brixton, no, Brixton.
It's Brixton, Brixton.
It's even better than that. It's Brixton Law.
Is it really?
Is it?
Brixton Law.
Oh, I love it.
Hobbs and Shaw.
And Brixton Law.
Deckard Shaw
lovely.
And Brixton Law.
How does no one in this movie say, we fought the law? And the law won. What's going on?
Well, we don't want to get into spoilers.
Yeah.
Anyway, they once again have to save the world.
I mean,
it is actually impossible. And also, if it were possible, all of the trailers have already done it.
Indeed, they have.
Vanessa Kirby is an interesting character here. She plays Hattie Shaw.
Hattie.
I wish I were kidding.
She's from the wrong end of the tracks.
Well, she is supposed to be Deckard Shaw's sister, despite being 21 years younger.
Yeah, and you see them as kids together.
Yeah.
And there's an age difference of like 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should probably save this for the spoiler special. But anyway, she works for MI6. And at the beginning of the movie,
of course she does.
She is sent to retrieve an item that Brixton Law is after. And the only way she can do so is by injecting it into her own body.
It's a virus. We can say it's a virus.
Okay, it's a virus. And so now our heroes have to find her because she's been framed for everything.
Yes.
And rescue her and get the thing out of her body in a very complicated manner before she becomes like, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow in Contagion.
Yeah.
Or Gwyneth Paltrow.
No. Chris, as your lawyer.
And I think it's fair to say that if this plot sounds dog shit, it's because it kind of is. Now, that's not to say the film is. So this is a film that my understanding of this is that Drew Pearce, bless his cotton socks, came in and punched this up a little bit, didn't he?
He did.
So it feels to me like the skeleton, the outline of what this film should be, was not the best. And the vestiges of this, the MacGuffin of this, the broad story of where this goes is entirely forgettable nonsense. That said, I don't think anyone was coming to this film looking for a really in-depth espionage thriller. What you wanted was The Rock and Jason Statham as Luke Hobbs and Deckard Shaw having a go at each other, insulting each other, occasionally punching each other, and I think we do get a lot of that.
There's a lot of that. There's a lot to like. There's a lot of driving fast.
Not as much as you expect from these movies.
I find quite a lot, actually.
Really?
More than I expected from this movie, maybe.
Because there's token car porn for the Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
And there's also one shot of a lady's arse.
There is.
Yeah, which is way below average for
this
series.
But it felt like it was a deliberate nod.
Mm.
I will give them perhaps undue credit that it was referential and not just arse ogling. But
I think that's because that maybe just sets up the link between this and the Mothership franchise.
Yes.
There are arses.
Yes, a cheeky callback, if you like.
Oh,
literally.
Literally.
Anyway, you know, I think we enjoy spending time with these characters. They're really fun together. They were kind of the high point of the last Fast and the Furious film.
It doesn't always work.
It doesn't always work. Yeah. There is a hit-miss ratio to this. I think this film is too long.
Yes.
There's a whole middle act that you could lose happily to keep this kind of flowing. I also think from an action point of view, it peaks very early. Like all the stuff that happens in London early on is great, and there's a chase through the streets of London, which is fucking unbelievable, and not just because we see a slow-mo drive-by of a Greggs, which is, you know, I was there for
Greggs
that.
Is having a very good summer.
It really is. I mean, London has never looked quite so much like Glasgow, I'll be honest, but it is a fun chase, yes.
Yeah.
And you're right, I think there's quite a lot of cool stuff early on. The problem with this, for me, is I absolutely agree, there's too much in the middle that should be taken out, and some of the sort of insulting each other scenes are not that witty and should have been trimmed by about 50%.
Yeah, it's like an amateur night at the rap battle.
It is exactly.
And some of them are really fun.
Some of them
are really not.
There are some good lines in there, but really it should be massively tightened up.
Yeah.
But like by the end of this film, if you're kind of sitting there thinking this supposedly real world-ish film is less convincingly realistic than at least, I would say, 4 or 5 Marvel films, I feel like you've maybe gone a bit too far at times.
That's one of the things I liked about this movie, because the Fast and Furious movies from Fast 5 onwards have just been becoming increasingly batshit insane. Mm. To the point where from Fast 6 onwards, they're really not about car racing anymore.
No.
They're heist movies that then became sort of weird comic book movies where Vin Diesel and The Rock are essentially superheroes, just without the trappings of being actual superheroes. Mm. And this movie leans into that. This is pure gonzo sci-fi. Idris Elba's character is a cyborg, essentially, for want of a better phrase. It goes into full-blown saving the world shit. The next thing, they will have superpowers.
And be in space.
They will go to space.
That's where it's going. So I was okay with that side of this thing.
For me, this is the first Fast and Furious film where every person on board is on board. Like, they all know what this is. They're absolutely aware. Whereas I still don't believe Vin Diesel understands what Fast and Furious has become.
My only quibble with that is, the Vin Diesel seriousness about these films has always been expressed by his endless use of the word family.
Family.
And that,
tell them about the honey mummy.
That mantle here is taken up by The Rock. And he is obviously very sincere in other films. But I was a bit like, no, your job is to not be sincere and let Vin Diesel be sincere. And I don't understand why you are talking endlessly about family right now.
But, you know, it's also about family in terms of the Shaws themselves.
Yes, true.
Helen Mirren's in it as Mrs. Shaw. We saw her in Fast 8. Obviously, it revolves around a relationship between Deckard and Hattie.
Oh,
and, you know, that's all about family as well. There's a certain amount of reconciliation that goes on in the movie. And that's a theme of the film. If this movie can be said to have a theme, that's one of the themes. So I think it's still there. But the problem, one of the issues I had with this, while I found this enjoyable to a degree, I didn't enjoy it as much as I wanted to, because one of the problems I had with it is that yes, I would totally agree that I don't think that everyone's in on the joke of the Fast and the Furious movies, especially its main star and producer. I think the more ridiculous aspects of those films are over poor Finn's head, bless him. But that's fine, because it's made him a millionaire many, many times over, so what does he care? But I feel that this movie goes too far the other way in a weird way. It doesn't modulate itself enough, and it almost becomes smug and lazy at times.
It's definitely lazy in some of the plotting and, say, literally the passage of day to night in certain sequences. Mm-hmm. And indeed, night to day.
Characters suddenly appearing hundreds of miles away.
Well, yes. And also, I do feel that the subtitle for all of these films, but especially this one, could simply be "Physics Doesn't Work That Way." But yeah, I like this, and I like that it leaned into the comedy. And there are a number, and I won't give them away, but there are a number of comedy cameos in this. And they've been kind of mixed reception to people I went to see with, but I really enjoyed them all.
I laughed at those,
A lot of it seemed to be heavily improv, but it was very funny.
Yeah, I did laugh consistently through this film, but I mean, as with many Fast and Furious films, I think I was laughing at sometimes rather than with. But I did have a lot of fun. I just feel like it's not up to the heights of Fast 5 and Fast 7, which, as regular listeners will know, I adore.
There's a sentence.
They are high, damn it. I would also note for any interested viewers that there are listeners that there is a mid-credit sting, another mid-credit sting, a bit more in the mid-credits, and a post credit sting. None of them seem to have anything to do with anything. They're not obviously setting anything up for Fast and Furious 9, but you know, they're there and you might want to know that.
Yeah. So stay, don't stay is entirely up to you. There are also some interesting, fun cameos as well. There's plenty to talk about in the spoiler special for this, and we will be doing one for it, and it will be out at some point next week.
Hurrah.
We gave this film 4 stars.
4 stars.
Which
could probably tell that I'm not entirely on board with that.
Was quite generous. But I'd have given this 3. It's like, it's daft, it's stupid, it's objectively not what I would call good, but there's lots to enjoy. Like, it's fun. Like, it's a fun film. Yeah. You will enjoy yourself.
This is very much a film to go and see with friends who appreciate, you know, big stupid action movies.
Yeah.
And ideally high five your way through it. Like, I honestly feel like you need to be giggling at it consistently, because if you stop and think about it for even a second, you'll end up like Chris.
And maybe that's where I went wrong, Helen. Like,
I wasn't there with you.
You and I, we go see these movies together, we high five.
I know.
You know, I shit where I eat. It's totally fine.
Yeah, it's really smelly.
But in this case, I was on my own. I was maybe a little bit lonely, a little bit sad.
I don't want to say that you abandoned me, but, like, you know, if the shoe fits.
So, 4 stars then for Hobbs and Shaw presents Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw : Hobbs and Furious presents Hobbs and Fast. I don't know what it's called, but we gave it 4 stars. So there we go. Now it's time to talk about animals. Last week's guests on the show were Alia Shawkat and Holiday Granger, or Vacation Granger if you're listening in the States, and I will never stop saying that. And this is a comedy drama set in that there Dublin, Jimbo. Did you have to understand? Were you going to film and you were going, oh, Jesus, no, I need the subtitles. I don't understand a word they're saying.
It was a lot like that, especially because this is based on and adapted by Emma Jane Unsworth from her novel, which is set in Manchester. And of course, Holiday Granger is Mancunian.
Yep.
However, for funding reasons, the whole thing got relocated to Dublin. So it is indeed very Irish. But actually, works, and Granger nails. I mean, let's be
nails
honest.
A Dublin accent.
She nails a Dublin accent.
Oh, Jesus.
Yes, it's very, very good. I enjoyed this a lot. So this is Holly Granger and Alias Shawkat. Granger plays a writer called Laura, and Shawkat is kind of an expat American called Tyler. And they've been best friends for 10 years since uni, and they have spent that decade drinking, doing drugs, and shagging, and generally living it up. As
like
we here
Empire
do on the Empire podcast.
Yes.
But this is what they've done with their 20s, and they're coming into the 30s now, and the fundamental sort of crux of this is that Granger meets a young classical musician, as one does in a pub, played by Farfay, and Shawkat has no intention of giving up her sort of partying lifestyle, and it creates a rift between them. Now, it sounds quite twee as a setup, but the actual execution is far from. Like, it's very much a celebration of female friendship, but also their excess, their lifestyle, their debauchery. There's no judgment. It's not frowned upon. It's like, these are just people enjoying themselves. These are people living their lives to their full, and it is not casting aspersions on them or trying to kind of pigeonhole. Like, there's no punishment. There's no judgment in this film, and I really liked that about it. It accepts them for who they are. And I thought they were great, great characters, very, very believable.
Who did the directions?
The directions are done by Sophie Hyde. And she does a really good job with this film. Like, I did,
with the directions.
With the directions. Oh, the directions. You've never seen such directions. The directions were marvellous.
Left a bit, right a bit. You're there.
Yeah. No, it's a really good film. It's also a very unusual film. It won't be to everyone's taste, but all I'm going to say is one of the first scenes sees a character strip naked and set pubes on fire accidentally on a bar. So, you know, you don't see that a lot. Not even in Hobbs and Shaw.
It's weird. It does feel like someone's just put cameras in the Empire Podcast studio and just
mining us for inspiration.
She accidentally sort of, while dancing naked on a bar, leans too close to, I think, what is a flaming Zambuca.
That's exactly what happened in the pilot episode.
Oh my God. Yeah. Wow.
Be careful, chaps.
Yeah.
Mm.
Wax for your safety.
On the other hand, Ali did end up at Radio 1, so it was,
yeah, there were no ill effects.
It worked out nicely, yeah.
Your lawyer, Chris, I'd like to make it clear that you're joking about Ali.
I am joking.
For whom you have the utmost respect and whose pubes you know nothing about.
Well, let's not go that far.
And I will sign a document to that effect.
But yeah, so Animals is great. Really enjoyed it. We gave it 4 stars. So, you know, go and watch that. If you don't want to see a man pulling a helicopter out of the sky with his hands. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. Sounds
I haven't
good.
Seen that yet. I'm dying to, so sounds I'm
yeah, well, you'll like it.
I will.
Sounds good to me. Quick shout out to 2 movies that are also out this week and that we gave 4 stars to. Ritesh Batra's Photograph and Holiday, which is a slab of darkness from Swedish first-time director Isabella Eklof, who co-wrote Border. Did anyone see Border? Came out last year, the troll, fantasy troll thing. Really, really great.
So I was sitting behind
it was this
Nick.
Year. It came out this year.
I was sitting behind Nick when he watched it, if that helps.
No, it doesn't help.
Okay.
It has the year's weirdest, most unforgettable sex scene. It blows the one in Hobbs and Shaw out of the water.
Wow.
Wait, was there one in Hobbs and Shaw?
There wasn't one in Hobbs and Shaw?
Pretty sure there wasn't.
What film was I watching?
I do not know.
That might explain why you didn't think there were enough car chases.
I think I know what's happening. Anyway, so those are also out this weekend. We gave them both 4 stars as well. And we should also tell you this week to do the right thing.
Do the right thing.
Do the right thing.
Yep.
And listen to the Pilot TV podcast, which is on Monday.
Wow, that may be the first time I've ever heard, because that was pretty funny. You know, so I can't have the cut out.
However,
yes.
Do the Right Thing is getting a re-release for its 30th birthday.
Yes.
Which is terrifying. It still feels uncannily and quite upsettingly relevant mm-hmm. as a film.
Mm-hmm.
But it is very, very, very much worth seeing. If you haven't seen it, it's Spike Lee's second film. I think it was his second
third
feature.
Film.
Third feature.
Third
God.
Film. Yeah. She's got to have it in school days.
You're correct. Yeah, third film. It should have, as they actually talked about at the Oscars that year, Kim Basinger, I think, made the point that this film should have been up for Best Picture. And she was absolutely right. It is a phenomenal, phenomenal film. And yes, you should see it. I don't want to say too much about it. It's set during a heat wave in New York City, mm-hmm. in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And it sees tensions flare up around the local
tensions.
Pizzeria Ooh. Owned by Danny Aiello.
Yep.
Giancarlo Esposito is in it.
Yep.
Spike Lee himself, obviously. Mm-hmm. Bill Nunn has a fantastic role. Samuel L. Jackson's there in a small role. Rosie Perez.
Yep.
Incredible cast, but just it's an even better film.
It's a great film. Great film. And go and check it out if you want to do the right thing this weekend. I think it's also coming out on Criterion Collection Blu-ray over here as well. So if you haven't seen it, it's going to have loads of great bells and whistles. And if you want to do the right thing, at some point in the next couple of weeks, our second podumentary will be going up to celebrate Empire 30. And that will be a podumentary dedicated to Do the Right Thing with the great Spike Lee himself.
Cool.
So that's going to be very exciting. So if you haven't listened to the first one, the first podumentary was dedicated to James Cameron's Avatar. And what they are, they're kind of podcast documentaries. So they're long form features narrated by yours truly, but using fresh interviews with, in that case, James Cameron, and in this case, Spike Lee. So check that out. It's going to be a lot of fun. Spike was in very, very good form. 5 stars then for Do the Right Thing. And then we're going to do the right thing really, really quickly and wrap up the review section with the Angry Birds Movie 2.
Angrier Birds?
Can we just keep this one short as well? Because I have to say that Angry Birds sponsor Everton Football Club, so therefore I'm going to adopt a very just negative body language. That's okay?
Yeah.
Wow, that is really negative. Quite angry. But no, the film is a positive film. So I saw a very early cut of this, so I didn't review it. I want to make that clear because I saw an unfinished print. Chris, stop it.
So
breathe.
Angry.
Breathe, Chris.
So
breathe.
Angry.
You're like one of the pigs in the film.
So if you remember the last film, you will, of course, know that Jason Sudeikis is Red, who is a red bird. Not kidding.
They don't just throw this shit together.
No, they throw.
Oh,
there you go. He was the angry bird. He was at war with the island of pigs who lived nearby his bird island.
Please give us more of the mythology.
Yes, but now they've teamed up, you see, because there's a big purple bird who lives on an ice island. Com.
So hang on, isn't this the trope you hate the most in cartoon form?
It is the trope I hate the most.
Where the villains have become the heroes
become
to fight
the
another villain.
Oh my God. I mean, they're still a bit dodge because, you know, they're pigs in Angry Birds, so they're not the greatest people in the world. But neither is the big purple bird on the other island.
You either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself launched at the villains. Is that basically what this is?
You either
is
become this? A hero or you don't come back for the sequel. It seems to be the rule in Hollywood these days. Anyway, that's beside the point. This is actually very fast, very funny, quite charming, very, very colourful. The kids are going to love it, I guess. I don't know. I've never played the game, so I'm not what you would call an Angry Birds expert.
See, that I was going to make a Angry Bird joke there, but then thought you might punch me, so I'm just going to leave it.
That's probably wise. I might have done. But there's some cute bits, and there's a cute running gag in this. You know, like the little squirrel thing in Ice Age? There's a kind of running gag in this with three little chicks trying to retrieve a lost egg. So
it all sounds good, Helen, but I'm still so furious at the mere existence of this movie that I didn't process a single word you said. But it sounds great.
The film's fast, Chris is furious, and we gave this how many stars?
We gave this 3 stars.
3 stars, which actually in Angry Birds world is maximum stars.
That's actually very true, yeah.
So I guess it's the best movie ever made.
Yeah.
But then again, I have to deduct points for their association with Everton Football Club. So 1 star then for the Angry Birds movie 2. It is most regrettable, but there you go. You dance with the devil, you're going to get burned. Right, on that bombshell. Wow.
I do have, joking aside, I will mention... While I have done my comedy pilot plug, I will say we have some good guests coming next week on the Pilot TV podcast. Cree Sniper Minerva is on the podcast next week.
Ooh.
Gemma Chan, who stopped by with Dominic Savage to talk about I Am Hannah, which is the third part of Savage's I Am anthology TV series.
I just had a huge slab of deja vu.
Why?
I felt that you've done this before.
Shill for the Pilot TV podcast?
No,
yeah,
no,
absolutely.
I know you've done that before, and it seems to be precious that we can stop, you, sadly. But everything about that last 45 seconds or so, I'm sure I've had it before.
You are now entering the Twilight Zone.
This is so weird. It's like that movie. What did they call it? Deja Vu. That's the one. So weird.
Well, anyway, Gemma's on the podcast. Come and have a listen. It drops on Monday. When does it drop, Chris? When is it? It's Monday. It's Monday. So this is Friday. It'll be Monday.
Yeah, you've already recorded it, and it's all good. And
it is.
Everyone's great. Okay, fantastic. And while we're here doing very, very quick plugs, we should mention our live podcast again, September 14th at the London Podcast Festival. I don't know how. I presume there are tickets available. They haven't told me it's sold out. So
yeah, same here.
I presume they will if it were so. There might be some tickets available to that still, so log on to www.3wskingsplace.co.uk. And if you buy tickets to three or more shows at the London Podcast Festival, which is adding new shows all the time from great podcasts on this side of the pond and great podcasts from the other side of the pond and great podcasts that have nothing to do with ponds. And so if you go to see three or more shows, and I hope that you would, including, of course, the Empire Podcast, you can get a 15% discount of your purchase.
Wow.
And that ain't too shabby, let me tell you. So we would love to see you on September 14th. So do please buy tickets and come and see us. And hopefully a special guest. And if you are, for example, Tom Cruise or Brad Pitt, and you are listening to this and you're free on the evening of September 14th, come along.
Be on the show.
Be on
the show.
Join us. It's a lot of fun. A lot of great stuff inside the podcast.
All right.
And that bombshell, that is it for this week's Empire Podcast. Join us next week for more film-related fun. We'll be joined by a Blinded by the Light double whammy.
Ooh.
So we'll be joined by director Gurinder Chadha and also the star of that movie, Vivek Khara. So, very exciting.
Hurrah.
Very exciting times ahead. But until then, until we meet again, until that auspicious occasion, it is goodbye from our wonderful guest this week, Nick Frost.
He's already gone.
Did wonder why he was very quiet during that Angry Birds review. Anyway, it's goodbye from James Dyer.
Goodbye, Christopher.
Oh, just say goodbye to Chris.
What have I done? You've never called me Christopher.
Well,
have I done something?
That's the naughty name, isn't it?
You're just going to have to figure that out, Chris.
Christopher!
Anyway, it's goodbye from Helen O'Hara.
Toodaloo.
and it's goodbye from me. You know, I'm off to do... Well, you know, I didn't get a chance to do this during the Lord of the Flies thing, but I'm excited by the fact that Luca Guadagnino is making a new movie because means that he might be in the market for a new theme tune.
Oh, boy.
And I'm off to work on it because, you know what, guys? I think Lord of the Flies deserves a really cracking theme tune. All right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Load me by your flies. Load me by your flies. Oh, yeah.
Chris, have you ever read the book? Just asking for a friend.
Yes, I have, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Bash me, Benjamin. No, yeah, I have read it, but a long time ago.
Bash me with your rock.
Bash me with your rock. That's good, I'll do that.
No.
Bash me with your rock. Bash me with your rock. Oh, yeah. Luca, you know how to get in touch with me. DM, Instagram, I am available. And very cheap. You can have me for £700. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time.
Bye.